Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another episode of the Kalamcast podcast. And with me today is recurring guest, Dr. Shiraz Mekri.
Assalamu alaikum.
A guest that is quite pertinent for today's topic. And seeing as many of us are unfamiliar, I'd ask him to introduce himself. He's Dr. Zia Ansari. I understand you have a great deal of expertise with relation to COVID-19. Can you briefly talk about that, inshallah?
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Ziauddin Ansari. I'm one of the intensive care specialists here in Melbourne. I'm a director of intensive care medicine at Epworth. I do work in different hospitals here in private as well as in public, Western Health as well as in Knox Private. Being an intensive care specialist, obviously, we are the front line in this planning and managing these COVID-19 patients. So it's been quite busy for the last few weeks. And thankfully, you know, whatever we were doing here in terms of controlling the disease, it worked. And we really didn't have the sort of thing we were expecting in the very beginning, like what happened in UK and America, Italy as well. Whatever measures we have taken, and especially the control measures government has taken, and I must thank the community and everyone to basically strict isolation and obviously having the sort of government plans, what they put in, it worked. And community followed that. And I must thank community for that.
What do you think in particular led to this success, the current success? Was it that downloading the app or general awareness?
No. I think if you look at the Australian population, they are very sort of conscious and well-educated population here, you know, in comparison to some other countries. So I personally feel the way our living standards here, and we don't really have two-tiered system like we have in America, where you have a huge difference between have and have-nots. And It does make a huge difference what happened in America and what we are seeing here. In America, the healthcare system is so bad that people just can't have you know, they can't go to the doctor, they don't have the facilities, and it costs a lot of money. And there are a lot of poor people there. So you have people, those who are very, very rich, and you have people, those who are really poor, can't afford. If you compare that system with Australia, I think, alhamdulillah, we are lucky living here in this country. Yeah. You know, we have one of the best healthcare system. And I can tell you, especially in terms of intensive care services and critical care services, we are one of the best in the world. And the reason I'm saying this, because our outcomes, you know, if you compare our outcomes with anywhere in the world, we will come on top. We are really lucky living in this country and having a healthcare system, the society, the way our society works here. Although we do have poor people in this country, but the difference between rich and poor and that gap is not really that big. And that's one of the reason why our testing, if you look at, that was a successful thing. In the beginning, we did do a lot of tests. If you look at our overall testing numbers, I think per capita, we are one of the leading in terms of testing this for COVID. So early isolation and then isolating those people and testing was the key. And then people followed the government guidelines and they stayed at home. Social distancing is the main thing, which has shown really, if you look at China, the way they have controlled the whole pandemic there, it was only social restrictions and social distancing measures. And in the beginning, if you look at our, mainly the cases were imported from overseas. Either you take cruise ships or you take people coming from overseas, America mainly. And then obviously once you start to have these cases, you're going to have community spread. We control that community spread very well by testing and then isolating people. So I think the main reason we are successful here is obviously social distancing, testing, isolating, and our healthcare system.
I was just looking up the death rate as a result of COVID-19 in the US, and it's staggering. 70,000, it's a huge number. Yeah. And we're very thankful, at least, that the number is far less than, you know, what we are seeing overseas. That as a result of people living close by, or are there factors which led to that, you know, people not realizing the importance of the situation?
Yeah, the reason America have bad numbers and a lot of deaths, you know, whenever the healthcare system, same thing happened in Italy and to some extent in UK also, the same thing happened. So when healthcare system is overwhelmed and you have a situation where the community spread is so high and the load on healthcare system is so high that you just can't cope. And in that situation, obviously, patients cannot get the care they deserve. And if you look at the whole progression of this disease, you know, majority of cases, as you know, they are mild cases. But the sick ones, those who obviously died, the people, those who ended up in an intensive care unit, their mortality is very, very high. Their death rate is very high. So just to give you a little example, if you look at Italy, the people, those who ended up in intensive care unit on ventilators, their mortality rates were around 67%. It's very similar in UK. London at the moment, they're running around 64 to 65%. New York, they have 67 to 70% mortality in New York and overall in American. I'm talking about intensive care mortality. If you look at overall mortality in terms of, you know, the people, those who have got infection and the number of people died, it's around 3.4% overall. So it's three, four times more than influenza. The reason, obviously, all three countries, Italy, UK, and America, have such high death rate. I should mention Sweden also. Sweden also have high death rate. And the reason I'm mentioning Sweden, because they have taken a very different approach to what we have done here. Sweden basically did the lockdown there. They kept their economy going. And they have taken this view that we will just isolate the high-risk ones and protect them, and rest we will just let it have the heart. And they probably were looking for herd immunity. So just to give you a little comparison between that approach and our approach here, Sweden death rates is 297 per 1 million population. And in comparison to that, Australia is 38 per million population. So you can see the huge difference between Sweden and Australia. And then again, I mean, that's because Sweden has taken this view. And I'm not sure Australia will ever accept. I mean, in that view, you just have to accept that certain people will die. But in Australia, that option was rejected straight away. In the beginning, we have three options to manage this whole pandemic. You know, there is some task force being made in Australia where there were more than 100 epidemiologists, more experts from different fields. They sat together and then they basically advised the government, and government was listening to the expert advice. There were three main options to contain the whole thing. So one option was obviously to eradicate the disease. Now, to eradicate the disease, you need to really have a robust testing system, surveillance, isolation, managing the disease. For that, you really need longer term lockdown. Obviously, there are consequences of that approach. So the second approach was adaptation and controlling and containing the, and we keep calling it flattening the curve. And the third option was basically we accept that, okay, a certain number of people will die. Let them die and let's continue with the routine activity and then we might come out better in the end. So the third option was rejected by the government straight away. So that's not an option. We just can't accept people dying. If we can save one life, we should probably try to save that. So we are basically working on two options at the moment. And if you see, there is a little bit of difference in approach between Victoria and Canberra. Victoria is trying probably at this stage to achieve a sort of eradication, which I doubt is feasible at this stage. You need really long-term lockdown for that. New Zealand did achieve that at this stage, but then obviously they have much stricter lockdown than us. So obviously there are pros and cons of both strategic, decision making. Longer term lockdown, strict lockdown, you have economic consequences you need to think about. So I think the way forward, obviously, as you have seen today, there are some discussion happening about relaxing the whole lockdown measures what we have. So we see how it all goes. Now, the risk what we have in moving forward is surge, second surge, basically. It's very realistic. It's very realistic because there is downside, obviously, of the approach we have taken because our communities hasn't been exposed to the infection. So the risk of, trying to contain and eradicate is unless we have a global sort of effort to eradicate the virus, which can happen. We did do with SARS, we did do with MERS, which in the end, virus did die down. But with currently the way we are at the moment, the risk is obviously second surge, which is going to happen, I think. If you take example of Singapore, they were very, in the beginning, they controlled their pandemic very, very well. Their death rates very low. But then they have significant second surge. So Korea had the same. China at the moment, they don't have at this stage, but they're still getting some cases, which probably most of them coming from overseas. The second surge is very, very realistic. And that's where the testing comes into play. Tracing, tracking the contacts, isolating them, testing them. And this testing is called sentinel testing, where you go in and you do asymptomatic. That's what we did last week. We just finished our testing today. And alhamdulillah, we don't have many cases, except obviously cluster you had, and everyone is aware about that cluster coming from Meatworks. And this is the real concern. And, one patient can cause problems just going out. And now we have 70 plus cases in Victoria just from one cluster. So I think that moving forward, we will keep on having these small outbreaks here and there. The important thing is that we identify them, track them, trace the contacts, manage them, isolate them, and then just keep moving. And the reason you get second surge, What usually happens when people, obviously, they're not immune at the moment. So even that immunity, there's a lot of controversial sort of evidence coming out at the moment. Some suggestion are that people not having long-term immunity and the antibodies are not that robust like you see with some other infections, where once you had infection like happened with the measles and other diseases where chickenpox. So once you have this, you get lifetime immunity. But with this one, at this stage, we are not sure that even if we get immunity, how robust that immunity will be. So that's one thing. Second thing is the risk of second surge will always be there till we have, on average, you know, if you have one person who can infect more than one, then it's called, you know, infection rate or growth factor. So if we have that more than one, there is always a risk of second surge. So what that means, if one person is infecting, I mean, if you look at this virus, it has got R0 of 2.7. What that means, that one person can infect 2.7 people. And you can see how it can spread. And this is what you're seeing in America, where they were slow to do testing and they're still not doing enough testing. So you have so many people in community, those who are spreader. So then what happens when people don't have immunity, they come out, you have asymptomatic carrier who will infect another 2.7. So that's how it spread. By reducing the community spread and growth factor below one, then you have less chances of having that sort of scenario, what we are seeing in America. At the moment, Australia is sitting less than one, which is very, very good. And that's why government is talking about relaxing the you know, all these measures they have put in. And my feeling is that there will be a gradual release of restrictions, and then we will continue doing surveillance, contact tracing, testing, and we might see some clusters, outbreaks here and there, which needed to be controlled and managed that way. And so far, even this, which we had in Victoria, is being managed really well.
It seems like we're going to go back to life as normal, just with a lot of precautions. Would that be fair in saying that?
I won't say as normal. I doubt it will be completely normal. I think after this virus is not going away. I think we just have to learn to live with this virus. There are two exit strategies here. One is we get vaccine, whenever we get vaccine. And vaccine is one way to develop herd immunity. So you vaccinate everyone, and then I think we can say, okay, we are okay. Second option is obviously containing and managing testing. I believe that we're gonna live with this social distancing for a while. We need to change the way we interact with each other. Hygiene measures, again, are very, very important. So we need to stick to those, strict hand washing. We need to maintain those measures in moving forward. And I don't think they're going anywhere. And the other thing which a lot of people will adopt themselves, and you will see, you know, if you remember Asian countries, especially Japan and Hong Kong, Singapore, they're very used to wearing face masks. And you know, so even here in Melbourne, when you see tourists coming out, you will see they're wearing face masks. So my feeling is that people will adopt those without even government forcing them. It's a prevention. And the other thing which I expect to happen moving forward as we open, maybe putting face shield, that's another way of reducing the spread. And I don't know if you have noticed already, some supermarkets, they're putting these plastic shields around the people, those who are coming in contact, especially salespeople on counters. So those sort of measures are useful. And these measures obviously will help us to contain further spread moving forward.
Obviously, continuing to work at home if you are able to do so, I would imagine that's
Definitely. I think one good thing came out of all this. You know, there is always silver lining in everything you see. Obviously, there are a lot of consequences of economic losses and all those things. People might lose their jobs. So those consequences are there, but then at the other side, if you see that, you know, you might see that there are certain things coming out of this pandemic, which is, you know, innovation. People are innovating the way they work. people are finding digital world now that, oh yeah, we can do work. Doctors are finding that, oh yeah, we can see patients without bringing them into the clinics. So moving forward, there will be a lot of changes the way people gonna do business, at least in short term.
Even based on your explanation, it seems as though we're very far away from any kind of vaccine.
Yes, definitely, definitely. Look, the way the vaccine works, there's a lot of media attention at the moment that, you know, everybody thinks that they have got their vaccine ready. It doesn't work that way. And I'm not even sure that we will achieve one. And the reason I'm saying that, if you look at SARS-1, 2, MERS, all these previous virus episodes we had, they try to develop a vaccine all the time. It's not like we never tried. The difficulty with having a vaccine, and same thing might happen here, it's my personal view, that by the time we will get there, virus will change. And this is what happened with these viruses, you know, and they basically modify and then they just change their strain, or you might have different strain. So you spend all this money. I think all over the world, billions of dollars of money at stake, basically. Everyone is trying. And there are different countries, they're trying. Some people, they're closed. But unless you do human trials, and then you need to be able to show that there are two different things. One is that you do in your lab and you show response. That's different than putting into human trials and then getting the similar sort of response. Other thing, which is obviously why I'm saying it will take maybe more than a year, if at all we get one, is the immune response in itself. So if I say that a lot of people died in intensive care and those who got really, really sick, it wasn't just the virus, it was the immune response which has killed a lot of people. The consequences of that initial viral infection entering into your body and then releasing those things, the virus load, causing activation of your inflammatory response and immune response. Immune response works both ways, you know. You can have an exaggerated response which can kill people. At the same time, a measured response can save people's life. Unless you test that, unless you make sure that the response you are getting after putting a vaccine, whatever type of vaccine we get up, end up getting, we just need to make sure that, you know, we are not having more problems. And that's why it's going to take time. I don't think governments will approve vaccine. There are a lot of people have it. It's already there. It was there, actually. SARS, in H1N1 and SARS, when they had in Asia, they already started working on it. So it's not that hard. Once you get the genetic material and, you know, DNA of virus, people start working in labs. So they're two different things, labs and getting that to the humans. The whole process, even if it works well, takes 1.5 years. So we still have to basically live with it, get used to it, and just hope that whatever we are doing will continue to do that and we stay that way.
Is it possible that the strain will mutate into something milder? Could it mutate into a milder form? Doesn't have that immune response?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's possible. It's possible because if you see already, there are different strains of coronavirus. So,
yeah.
And if you look at around the world, if you look at Western world, we got all these, it's mainly 3-4 countries where we have got real bad mortality rate. But if you look at other countries, even in India, where I was expecting that it will be really bad there because, yes, you know, there's a huge population and the way they live. Yes, it is there. The numbers, cases are there, but I won't believe those numbers because testing is not there. But the death rate is not that bad like I will expect. So there is something there which is possible. I was looking at a literature published by one of the Indian guys from one of their institute, MIT or IIT. They looked at the DNA of their strain in India, and they're already saying that their strain is different than what we have in Western world or in America and Europe. So it's possible. It's possible that these viruses, they mutate pretty quickly. So by the time you get vaccine, you know, already that virus has changed and mutated.
So it sounds like we're still going to have to changing a lot of our lifestyles and the way that we live. I mean, this Ramadan for many of us has already been quite difficult because we've been stopped from socializing, going to the mosques. And it seems as though even after Ramadan passes and even after some of these restrictions have been lifted, we still need to be very cautious. Do you think that a lot of these concerns will become part and parcel of how we live? In the sense that I personally foresee a situation where people will be more fearful of attending larger gatherings or perhaps even attending the mosque or something of the like. What would you advise or say with regards to that?
Yeah, look, I think as you said, adaptation, obviously, you know, with time, we will get used to it. That will become part of our way of living, basically moving forward. So if you remember, and you know, obviously we were not there, but in 1918 when we have influenza outbreak, you know, a lot of people died in that outbreak. Same thing here. We will basically with time, I hope, that it will become the same another type of flu. And so I think at the moment, there is a lot of anxiety. There is a lot of concern among a lot of people. And that concern is not just unfounded concern. It's a real concern because the way this disease spreads, and that's where it's a mild form of disease, and this is where the problem is. If you have a disease where you're getting symptoms and then you can pick quickly, but this one you have asymptomatic patients, those who are having, you know, they might have significant viral load and they are spreading the virus and you don't even know. And that's why this one is really tricky. If it causes bad illness, then it's easy to pick, but majority of people, they have mild illness, and that's why it's hard. So my feeling is moving forward, we just have to continue with our social distancing measures, hygiene measures, and we have to be careful till either we get vaccine or the virus being eradicated like previous viruses we did.
One of the things I've noticed is that when these measures were announced by the government very early on, the people took them extremely seriously. Now, when you get halfway into it, you notice that people start to become somewhat more relaxed. You know, they're more tedious of all of these things that have taken place with regards to social distancing, isolation, and whatnot. It seems as though now that we're pretty much in the middle of it, people are starting to become more complacent when it comes to all of these issues you mentioned, such as washing the hand, such as maintaining that social distancing. Is there anything that you could perhaps advise with regards to that?
Yeah, look, my advice will be do not relax here, because we have achieved good results. Don't waste that. It's not over yet. We need to continue what we're doing. And you can see the reluctance in the government response too. You know, we're going to be releasing restriction stage-wise and gradually. So I can see why people, this, you know, fatigue sets in for a long time. People think, look, nothing is happening. What the hell is this doctor is talking about? But the reality is the reason nothing is happening because everybody has done a great job of following the guidelines. If we do not do that and we start following American style and start going out on the streets and, then we might lose whatever we have achieved. So to give you a little bit of perspective here about modeling, how we still think it could cause problem with the second surge if we don't, you know, follow these measures. I mean, in the beginning, we were basically looking at around 7,000 intensive care beds requirement. I mean, you can imagine if you have to have an intensive care unit in convention center, how that will be, who's going to look after them. So if a gynecologist is looking after a sick intensive care patient, you can see what will happen to that patient. And this is what happened in Italy. That's what happening in America. And same thing is happening in UK. The reason we have done really well in terms of even our mortality is because we don't have that many cases. If we have the same situation here in Melbourne, although we have one of the best healthcare system, we have one of the best intensive care system, we probably would have ending many, many more deaths. At the moment, you know, when I have one patient who is got COVID positive, there are four nurses looking after that patient. We can afford that. But if you look at America, you know, they don't have even people to look after those patients. Luckily and alhamdulillah, we haven't faced that situation yet that we have to decide as a doctor, you know. Some of my colleagues in America, you know, one of my colleagues' wife, she's on ECMO at the moment, she probably will die. So, and those people, those doctors have to decide who live, who died. It's a very, very hard decision to make for all those people, you know, and the trauma of that. And then you know that if we can give that patient 2 weeks, that patient might survive, but you don't have those 2 weeks. You just have to say, okay, this person probably will have a better chance of surviving. Let's pull this one out, get another one in. So it's a very, very difficult decision to make. And it's very, very hard on people, those who were in that situation. And I'm sure those people will have issues with mental issues and the stress and post-traumatic disorders once this is all over. Now, so my advice to everybody will be, please, please, please continue. Yes, if relaxation happened, go out, meet friends, but still make sure that we are following those hygiene measures. The other important thing I want to tell our community, which I found is very, very important. I found this tendency amongst the people that, you know, they want to go to work. Some people might have reason. Obviously, financial reason is the main thing. Because if somebody is working as a casual and he rely on that income, he will hide. And if somebody is sick and he turns out to be positive, you're basically spreading and then it becomes really, really hard. So my advice to people will be, please, if you're not feeling well, go to doctor and check yourself out. Do not hide and maintain those hygiene measures. And if whenever relaxation happens, it will happen. You know, we can't just stay inside and lock down the whole economy forever. It might happen in next few months. I believe it will be a gradual lifting of restrictions. But then again, if we have more cases, then they might shut down again. So it's not certain at this stage how long it will take. I'm just guessing. My best guess is, another 2-3 months before, you know. And again, it will depend on community spread. If we can keep the growth factor below 1, then there is a possibility that by the end of this year, we might even have some restriction lifted on traveling and all those things. But these are all guessing. I have no way to predict that. All our modelings are basically flawed. But then again, you have to have something to work on. So at the moment, we are working on those, you know, few more months, at least July probably, and gradual restriction. And then based on how the spread is, then government will decide.
Now, we've talked a lot about a possible cure, a vaccine, but one of the things I'm interested in, and perhaps even our listeners are interested in, is the origin of this particular virus. Where did it emanate from? There's a lot of discussion. If you read online, et cetera, and so forth, you will find so many things, so many theories.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, some of them are conspiracy, some of them perhaps rooted in something realistic. As a layman, you know, or lay people, we don't necessarily know what the truth of the matter is. Your expert opinion, what do you suppose is the origin of this particular virus?
Yeah, look, I do not support those conspiracy theories. Obviously, we are living in a different world nowadays where everything is being managed with WhatsApp and Facebook and social media, you know. Even the evidence and all the research being basically manipulated and published in social media, which I don't think is the right way of managing these things. Obviously,
we've done a great episode on that one in the last one. Actually, what I'm very curious about is it actually true that this virus came from as a result of bats?
And the wet markets in China.
Yeah. Yes. Look, I mean, it's a zoonotic disease. So zoonotic disease means it's usually virus spreads from animals to human beings. At the moment, this is the most likely thing. Look, no one knows for sure how it's all started, where it's all started. But knowing the previous two episodes of MERS and SARS-1. Both of them, they came from animals and then transmitted into the human beings. So on that basis, yes, we can say that it's probably came from bat. At this stage, whatever evidence we have is coming from wet markets in China, Wuhan, and that's probably what we all know at this stage. Exactly where it come from and what is the truth behind all those theories and conspiracies is possible. One of the theory obviously is being pushed by American president is that came from lab. Now, it's not unheard of, accidents do happen, and it's not a secret that this coronavirus is, people do research, and there is a fair bit of research going on when they're trying to develop HIV vaccine, they're trying to develop some other vaccines. And the way they do this, they do tests on animals and they do inject these viruses and they modify. Nowadays, you do see genetic modification of all these materials. So it's possible, but at the moment, the current view is among the scientific community is that it did come through the bat and from the wet markets. Other conspiracy theory is possible, but no one can prove them.
So that's, I guess it's concerning for us in that sense. It's a good place to sort of end or taper off the recording, inshallah. Is there any final lesson or any final word that you could perhaps provide members of our audience?
Be careful. Obviously, I will say that if you have any symptom, just go and see your GP. Do not ignore those symptoms. Maintain distance, maintain hygiene, and continue doing the great work we're all doing. I know it's hard on lots of people. There are lots of, obviously, psychological issues, psych issues, mental issues. There are many, many issues. And I think the key here will be as a community that we support each other and help. And it's a set time, it will pass. And inshallah, after all this happens, we will all be okay. But during this period, I think we just help each other. There are people, those who are financially suffering, there are people losing their jobs. So I think our role as a community, this is the time when we can show to the rest of Australia that this is how the Muslim community work, and this is how we work. So help each other, support each other, and in the end, we are all in together. And inshallah, you know, Allah will guide us through and get out of it.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful way to end. Dr. Ziauddin, I thank you for your time and your willingness to sit with us and share your knowledge with us. And I also thank Dr. Shiraz up there. He's been quiet, but he's been providing a lot of moral support. So I thank him for joining us as well.
Thank you. It's been very informative for thank me you. As well.
It's thank very, you. Thank you, Shiraz.
Thanks.
It's very thank good to have people such as yourselves within the community.